Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. It is Saturday morning, and you are listening to The Beacon. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Lainey.
Oh, boy, look at you. You perked right up. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
It's Veterans Day, huh?
It is Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. You know I have a beef about this Veterans Day, though. I won't get into it. I got into it last week. I won't get into it again this week.
Well, oh, you mean about it not being observed by all public facilities?
Yes, all public facilities. Right. Okay. That's what I meant.
Well, if it makes you feel better, Veterans today, there is a list of restaurants that they can go to.
That does make me feel better.
And they can get a free meal.
Do we have the list? Can we post it
no,
on our Facebook page?
We don't have it. Unfortunately, you would have had to have gone to one of the VA facilities in order to get it.
Oh.
It's just for veterans. It's very hush-hush.
Okay, very under the table. Mm-hmm. Very hush-hush. So there, it's not like, hey, you can go to Chili's on Veterans Day if you're a veteran and get a free meal.
No.
Okay.
Have you had someone in your family serve in the military?
Nobody. Nobody in my entire, well, actually, that's not entirely true. My uncle was, he was an accountant, and I might be getting the story wrong, but I know I'm getting some parts of it right. My uncle was an accountant mm-hmm. for the Army during the Vietnam War,
ooh.
And he was literally on the, well, he was serving, but he was on the tarmac about to be deployed into Vietnam, and he got called out of line because the Army needed somebody as an accountant. For like their home base here in America.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't, I mean, he was
safe. He didn't go to action.
He didn't go into action.
No, he just kept track of all the numbers.
Right,
oh,
right.
Okay.
But
that's
he was,
good.
I mean, as the story goes, he was on the tarmac, like ready to be deployed to Vietnam, and he got pulled off. So interesting story. But how about you? Any veterans in your family?
Oh, sure. My father served in World War II. He was on a PT boat.
Really?
Yeah, and he used to manage and deal with the depth charges. So what that is if there's something under the water that's an enemy, and they have like these barrels, and they have explosives in them.
Wow.
And that's about as best as I can explain it. And then drop them into the water. So I think I come from a Navy family. I myself never served.
Fascinating. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of respect and honor for those who do. I understand its importance,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I thank you all for your service. And I really wish that the public entities were observing you. But we here are today. And we've got a show full of
and not
features
only,
for our veterans.
Not only this show, but also The Lighthouse. Did you know that The Lighthouse has a call center, Joining Forces Call Center, which assists Illinois veterans and their families? Now, it's through a partnership with the Joining Forces and Unite. Now, this is something that's been ongoing for 2 years, and it really works very well. And some of the veterans we're going to have on the show today are individuals who work at that call center. It's funded by Boeing, along with McCormick Foundation. They subsidize the call center through a grant that's designed to give U.S. veterans support for needed resources. So if you have questions, if you're a veteran and you have questions about housing or finance or veteran wives need services, anything that you might need, you can call this number, 877-236-7702. The Lighthouse Call Center provides support to veterans at stages of reintegration into civilian life through programs and services, and a lot of those are focused on employment. So if you are in need of services, you can call that.
And this is all through the Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Does it provide services for individuals who have not been affected, whose site has not been affected?
Sure.
Okay. I didn't realize that the Lighthouse provided that service.
Mm-hmm. If you're a veteran and you need some assistance in some area, whatever it might be, you can call that number. And again, I will say it. It is 877-236-7702. And you'll be able to talk to some people. Not only just some people, but folks who work in the call center are veterans themselves.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. That's very, very valuable information. And I'm glad we have that because I've mentioned it on the show before, but I just feel like the lack of resources in this country in general for veterans is a bit of a travesty. So I'm always happy to hear when there are companies that are extending themselves into veteran services and offering those services. And
my dear, you have no idea.
Oh.
Because the segment that we have on the show is coming up later. We have a Veterans Roundtable, and they talk about some of the things that are affecting veterans. They echo some of the sentiments you just espoused.
I don't think it's any secret or surprise that you know, the lack of resources is abundant.
But before we get to that, Chicago Bureau Chief of Attorney General Madigan's office, Military and Veterans Bureau Grant Swinger will be here, and he will talk about, this is really, really, really bad. It's a scam that's been perpetrated on veterans concerning their pension benefits. It's a scam, and the Attorney General filed a lawsuit. This was a couple of weeks ago, so he just basically run down what happens. And if you're a veteran, you should be aware of this. So we thought we would bring that to you in addition to the roundtable.
All the wonderful people that are attacking the most vulnerable of our society and finding ways to scam. It infuriates me. So just be aware. If there's anything that feels a little out of place or doesn't feel right, follow your instinct on that. Do your due diligence.
Of course, along with the bad, there is good.
Always.
And in the state of Illinois, Illinois will honor 200 veterans who've gone above and beyond the call of duty as part of the state's bicentennial celebration.
Great.
So Governor Bruce Rauner and Veterans Affairs Director Erica Jeffries announced the launch of Honor 200. And they say that the Illinois Department of Veteran Affairs will work with veteran organizations to solicit nominations for people to be recognized as part of the program. And it's to showcase veterans and the values that they have when it comes to serving the community. Now, the Illinois Bicentennial Celebration will start December 3rd, and it'll include events and programs throughout 2018. And it will end with a bicentennial birthday party at the United Center on December 3rd, 2018, honoring 200 veterans that'll be recognized at the birthday party.
Great.
And that's a bit of good news, which sort of piggybacks onto a new segment that you yourself have come up with.
I have, and I don't have a name for it yet. I'm playing with a few things. It didn't come quite as easily as Lettuce Turnip the Beat did. That was kind of like an epiphany I had. It was like, ta! I heard the angels sing, but this one is not, I'm still working on the name. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. In light of all the darkness in the world, I mean, again, we had another mass shooting this week, and there's just like everyday heaviness and darkness. So I have decided that it is time to bring a little bit of good news into the world. So we have phased out our Lettuce Turnip the Beat section. What's the word I'm looking for? A segment. It's a little early. It's a little early in the morning.
Tomatoes.
Right, exactly. One or the other. And I'm going to start finding and seeking out stories of goodness that can, bring a little sunshine into our lives. So that's what we're doing. We're going to kick that off today. I'll have a name for you next week. I'll work on it. I'll dream on it. What is it when you put something under a pillow and then it like absorbs into your brain? What's that called? Starts with an O.
I don't know.
Okay. I'll look into that as well.
And if people have any suggestions, should they Facebook it?
Hit us up on our Facebook page, Lighthouse Beacon, baby. We're there. Mm-hmm. So I will be bringing you a little bit of good news, and then we will head into Luke's laboratory, as we usually do. Mm-hmm. And that will more or less be it. We've got a packed show full of all kinds of veterans goodness today. And Brent and Sandy, of course. Mm-hmm.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000 plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things, because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Recently, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan filed a lawsuit against the Association of Wartime Veterans, AAWV, and Atlantis Marketing Solutions Incorporated, AMS, and other individuals for allegedly carrying out a scam on disadvantaged wartime veterans and their families. Grant Swinger, Chicago Bureau Chief of Attorney General Madigan's Military and Veterans Bureau, is here to tell us more. Grant, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
First of all, can you tell us how these two companies allegedly violated the law?
Well, in our complaint, we've alleged overall that they violated the Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act by pretending to be something they're really not. Typically, they advertise that they provide education on certain VA benefits, particularly the non-service-connected pension. And would go out to places like assisted living facilities to do these pitches that are really designed to generate leads to sales of annuities that they would then conduct.
And exactly how many veterans do you feel fell victim to these seminars?
This has been happening over a number of years. We certainly believe that there have been hundreds of Illinois residents affected. We're still working on figuring out how many exactly.
Okay. Now, how would a veteran know if they have been a part of this scam? And if they do figure that out, what should they do?
Well, I think there are a number of tells. For starters, the one thing, I guess just as a screening device, you want to only be dealing with somebody who is accredited by the VA. What that means is somebody who actually represents you on a claim, which can be done, or even assists you with the initial work when you want to file a claim, has to go through this accreditation process through the VA. So you're essentially visible by the VA as doing this work, and also have to meet certain requirements as far as minimum amount of knowledge and responsibility to the people you're filing for. In our lawsuit, we allege that essentially none of the AAWV members had such accreditation. But not so coincidentally, they also all happen to be insurance agents, or as in Illinois, they call them insurance producers. And that, among other things, we allege was not fully disclosed to the people they were talking to. So they would make these presentations pretending to just try to help you understand the certain VA benefits. But then really they were trying to arrange for side meetings at a later time where they would pitch really only one kind of product, an annuity, for sale. And they're just trying to profit off of these veterans. It helps to understand a little bit what the VA pension is. Mm-hmm. The VA administers all kinds of benefits. In the case of the VA pension, we're not talking about a retirement pay. It's really a benefit that doesn't have to be connected to service in the sense that it's not you were injured in service or something. But if you meet certain requirements, you may be able to get a certain minimal payment from the VA. It's essentially a form of VA welfare, although that's not the way they necessarily phrase it. You have to have a certain amount of military service, not be dishonorably discharged, minimum active duty involving some period of wartime service. You have to have low income and then low net worth assets. And in the case in our complaint, there's a final requirement that can be met in different ways, but in our case, it's really all based on age. You have to be 65 or older. And why they're getting involved in all this is because they're scaring people into thinking that in order to qualify, they need to purchase an annuity to reduce down assets. And that people might not even be fully explained, just even like the explanation I've given you as far as what the requirements of the pension are, mm-hmm. We believe aren't even always being discussed, which is part of the reason why somebody should only get this advice really from an accredited VA veteran service officer. And also there's other than broader issues of right and wrong about trying to look poor when you have more assets, there's certainly, we filed the lawsuit on the basis of there are all kinds of misrepresentations made to make them think that they had to do this particular action to qualify for the benefit, which isn't even true, even if somebody is transferring assets, which in some circumstances might even be lawful. But we're saying that they are giving them half truths and misrepresentations to make them think that this is the only way, and they had to work with them about this.
And how does this lawsuit seek to make veterans who've been affected by this scam whole again?
Well, it's in early phases. It'll be subject to civil discovery, which we'll get a better picture on the financial impact. But it's both seeking injunctive and final relief. So certainly we would be attempting to shut down this model of operation. We'd certainly be reviewing the possibility of seeking restitution where possible, but definitely trying to get this type of predatory behavior stopped in Illinois. As well as we believe based on public information they've put out in the past that they're also present in a lot of other states as well.
Wow. And now, is this something that is frequently happening with veterans where they are targeted by fraudulent companies?
Just to stay on the topic of benefit scams based on the VA pension, this is only one type of model of scam I've seen. And I believe there are others in our state as well as across the country who are doing these kind of scams. So I do think there are other organizations out there. In a quick mention, I think another model of scam that I'm concerned about and we've had complaints on is people coming up to somebody like mom or dad needs home care assistance. And either they're a veteran or the surviving spouse of a veteran. There are businesses out there that will try to pretend that they're just offering, possibly through the VA, limited hours of care, but they won't fully describe that they're actually having them apply for the VA pension and that there'd be a whole amount of money coming back to them, which typically they try to pocket themselves, either in whole or in part. And so that's another thing where our office is looking into.
Okay.
And yes, there are other, my bureau is part of the Consumer Protection Division, so our mission is always seek out ways that military and veterans are scammed. But lately, I'd say a lot of her work is focusing on the ways, on scams built off of VA benefits.
And you mentioned your bureau. What other military and veterans' rights do you look out for or provide to veterans?
Well, in a very high-level view, you could break down our work perhaps into three categories. So I've been talking to you a little bit about consumer protection and particularly focused on VA benefits. We also work on military reemployment rights, which that's particularly of concern to current reservists, whether in the Federal Reserves or the National Guard, as far as their ability to come and go from their work. And also, if they're public employees, there are certain financial obligations that are attached to. So we receive a decent amount of complaints and work in that area. My colleague Tom Banning in our Springfield office currently is focusing a lot on that work. We also, beyond consumer and the employment rights issues, I'd say we have kind of other calls. We get calls even about the conduct of the VA, which we generally don't directly have jurisdiction on, but sometimes we can be of assistance. We do have a hotline number, which we certainly would like to put out, which is our 800 382-3000 number, where we welcome all anybody with a concern. Basically, the way I describe it is if you have a concern that involves military under veterans issues and somehow a legal issue, you're welcome to give us a call, because if we can't handle it, we always keep working and working better about how to properly refer such calls.
Okay.
And plus, it's a vehicle through which we can get complaints about what's out there, as well as be able to kind of track what are the issues that are of importance to Illinois.
All right, that's great. And I'm certainly grateful that you came on the program to talk about this issue. I know it's fairly early within the lawsuit. Do you have any idea of how long it might take to have this resolved?
Well, the life of any civil litigation can be longer. It is a little hard to say at this point. I'd say certainly we're looking into next year before there's probably any news on the case. We're just getting started.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on it, and we'll hopefully have you back at an appropriate time to talk more about it once it moves through the courts. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Grant Swinger, Chicago Bureau Chief of Attorney General Madigan's Military and Veterans Bureau, and the hotline number 1-800-382-3000. Well, Grant, thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm Brian Hawkins. You're listening to The Beacon.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. We're celebrating 110 years of changing lives in 2016. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Well, hello everyone and welcome back. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
Brett, how are you this morning?
I am doing well.
Good.
It's been a little chilly outside for my liking. We didn't really seem to have much of a fall. We kind of just went right into winter. And unfortunately, it sounds like we have snow in the forecast coming here in the next couple days. So that's not great.
It's like I've been telling people it already feels like December or
yeah.
January.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely gotten cold
yep.
out there. And have you had your coffee or your donuts this morning, Brett?
I did not have any coffee or donuts, but I did over the weekend. I actually was able to participate in a touch tour and audio describe performance over at the Lifeline Theater up on the north side of Chicago. And they have a children's show currently going on called Arnie the Donut.
Arnie the Donut, huh?
And
I just love the title.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. There were a lot of kids there. And their parents, and so they liked being able to go onto the stage area and feel the sugar-covered donuts, the costume of it. So
I was going to say they were probably costumes, not real sugar-covered donuts.
No, they were costumes, and they were very, very well done.
Uh-huh.
And then Arnie, he's a chocolate-covered sprinkle donut.
Oh, man.
And so it ended up, you got to be able to put your hands on that as well. And,
mm-hmm.
There were four different types of donuts that you were able to put your hands on. And they also had a couple characters were donut holes.
Sure. Oh, wow. Neat.
And so they were very, very funny, kind of the conscience of Arnie the Donut. So it's a very, very cute play. Like if you do have kids or grandkids, niece and nephews, and you're looking for a fun show to go check out, Arnie the Donut up at the Lifeline is a great one. And the touch tour was fantastic. They actually have a new audio describer that I have not listened to before.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Emily, and she did a very, very good job. There were a few notes that I gave her. It was only her second performance doing an audio describe performance.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
And so that was kind of something that was, I'm always try to give them some type of feedback after the show to help them grow and be able to just improve on the accessibility options that are available at these different theaters. Because if we're not giving them feedback, then they think they're doing everything that they need to.
Yeah.
And maybe there are certain things that theaters just need to continue to work on.
No, and that's so important, because the theaters here around Chicago have been doing audio-described performances for quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of those performances is actually during the holidays, A Christmas Carol. They do that. You probably know a little more than I do, but I know they do it
at the Goodman.
And yep.
They're actually, this year, looking at a lot of different theaters, there is some type of version of A Christmas Carol at maybe 3 or 4 theaters around the city, out in the suburbs. So you want to get that tradition, Christmas Carol is a great one. Last year, I went and saw it at the Goodman, and it got me into that Christmas spirit.
That's
about
it.
A week and a half before Christmas started.
Yeah.
Before I saw the play, I was kind of like, it didn't really feel like Christmas because we didn't have a lot of snow last year. So it's definitely an enjoyable experience, the Goodman's version, but even Shakespeare Theater, they're doing kind of a hip-hop, very musical-based Christmas Carol, which is an hour long. So it's a shortened version of it. I know Drury Lane has their own version of it as well. So there's a lot of opportunities to go and check out the Christmas Carol. There's White Christmas that's going to be over at the Cadillac Theater.
Yep.
And then American Theater Company, they actually do It's a Wonderful Life every year as well. So there's lots of opportunities, and we're getting into that season of the definitely the holiday performances are at a premium, and there's many of them.
I'll definitely have to go and check at least one of them out,
Yes.
But before the holidays, Brett, as we know, it's Veterans Day. We want to thank all of our veterans so much for everything they do for us. I personally have 2 cousins who are Iraq veterans, so thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely are. My family also, I think I have a cousin. She's currently in the military. Mm-hmm. And then I've had uncles and whatnot who have served, and my grandparents. Yeah. My grandpa actually served as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they are sacrificing their life to make sure that we have the freedoms we have, being able to be on the radio like we are currently. And so we're able to have the opportunity of freedom of press because they defend our freedoms overseas and even here. We have our military that's spread out throughout our country. And so I, from the bottom of my heart, and I know Sandy, from the bottom of your heart, we thank you.
Absolutely.
And, we know without you guys, we wouldn't have the freedoms we have today.
Absolutely. And I know that Brian actually spoke with a group of veterans. And he had a nice roundtable discussion. And why don't we take a listen?
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today, this Veterans Day. And I thought that we'd like to hear from you guys, being veterans, just a round table, to get your opinions on what's going on. So whatever you'd like to talk about. And first, introduce yourselves and tell about your service a little bit. So let's start with you, Michael.
All right. My name is Michael Smith. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Navy, the best branch of all the services.
Question.
I was a second class petty officer. When I got out, I did 8 years. I was on 3 ships: USS Midway aircraft carrier, USS Fresno, a LST, and the USS John Young, a Spruance class destroyer.
Okay, Bob.
Okay, my name is Bob Williams here, and I was in the United States Marine Corps for 4 years. I went to Vietnam. And I served 12 months in Vietnam, went to Da Nang, Phu Bai, and Japan, Yokohama. And I enjoyed every minute of being in the military. And my rank became E4. And just before I got discharged, it made me E5. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. Now, of course, we know Michael and Bob from being here at the Lighthouse, but we have 2 gentlemen Please introduce yourself.
Yeah. My name is Cecil Johnson. I went into service in 1954. I was an airborne medic. I went to Beirut in 1958 when they closed the Suez Canal. I was one of the first combat units from the United States to arrive in Vietnam in 65. I was a medical platoon sergeant. I did a two and a half there. Then I got out, and my rank coming out was an E7.
Okay, and the last gentleman on our panel.
Okay. My name is Marvin Gardner. I was in the United States Marine Corps for 2 years. I served over in San Diego, Japan, Thailand, the Philippines. I was also on two ships, the USS Okinawa and US John Hancock, which is the aircraft carrier. I'm not a Vietnam vet. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. Also had a wonderful time in the military.
And what's the distinction?
I didn't have boots on the ground. You got the Vietnam vets who serve boots on the ground, and then you have Vietnam veterans who are eras who were just in during that time period. Okay. So didn't actually go into combat, but was in the military during the time of war.
Okay. Well, I'd like to start just by asking, this is a general question, any of you can start. What would you say is the number one issue that's facing the veterans today? Anybody?
Well, I would like to say one of the biggest topics is financial. I work with the Illinois Joining Forces Call Center, and I get tons of calls of people that need, veterans that need financial assistance. They're not making the ends meet with the money that they have coming in, and I feel that where that stems from is that they weren't prepared properly coming out of the military to have that type of a job that translated from the military background into civilian life to help them support themselves and their family.
And what does that stem from?
The disconnect that we can go back to the Vietnam era. I signed up also in the Vietnam era so I can get the Vietnam era GI Bill, which I did in 76. And the attitude across the country was that they had a bad taste in their mouth about Vietnam, which translated into the veterans. So the veterans were looked upon as garbage, you know. So when they got out, they didn't care what happened with the veterans. Even a lot of employers didn't even want to hire veterans. So that was a snowball effect that lasted for almost 30 years, whereas that now it's the tide is starting to change because they're waking up and said, okay, we made a big mistake over 30 years ago.
When I came home from the military, I walked through O'Hara with my uniform on, all proud and all gungy. And I got spat on, and I got beer cans thrown at me, calling me a baby killer. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I immediately went into the washing room and took that uniform off and put on my civilian clothes so I could get back into society without that stigma on my back.
I just want to add to that. So I know you said figuratively you took your uniform off, but was that a mental thing too?
Right, it was.
Right.
It was a mental thing.
Yeah.
It was a mental thing, and that played a big part in it because, you know, you could walk around for, I'm speaking again on our concept, I walked around for 40 years undiagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Didn't know anything about it. Couldn't understand why I couldn't hold down a steady job. Couldn't understand why I couldn't build up a decent relationship with my family. Couldn't understand why I always walked around with mad thoughts in my mind and a mask on my face. I was undiagnosed and didn't even know it. You have a lot of veterans that come home undiagnosed.
Oh, yeah.
And once you come home trying to fit back into society and you have a mental problem and you don't know anything about it, oh, you got problems. There's big friction going on, suicide and other things also.
Now, Marvin, you said that when you came back, and I assume this is true for all of you, you got no love from the public because you served during Vietnam.
Yeah.
Has that changed at all? Do people view you differently with everything that's come out about that particular war?
You know, that's a real good question. I'm glad you tapped into that because it has changed quite a bit It has. It's a big improvement. You know, because just like I was saying at one point when I got out of the military, I didn't even consider myself as a veteran.
And Bob, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I have a different take on the different subjects here. I mean, I guess I'm pretty much the lucky one, I suppose. Because when I first came home from Vietnam, there were job offers. And when I think I went to one of the VA offices and they said they had three openings. One was for the CTA, Chicago Police Department, and Brinks Incorporated. So I went to Brinks. I retired from Brinks. I had 31 years at Brinks. So I was one of the fortunate ones to have a decent job.
I think, Marvin, you mentioned, or maybe it was you, Mike, you mentioned homelessness. How bad of a problem is that for veterans, even now, coming back?
It is very huge. It is very bad. Like Cecil had touched on, PTSD is real. And by not having it diagnosed, having the back of the government to help you successfully make that transition from military life to civilian life, you cause the vicious cycle of people that are homeless. And even with the last 10 years of this, the HUD-VASH program, to me, which is like a farce, it's just a numbers game, because it's only good for 3 to 6 months. And then that person is back homeless again, waiting on another HUD-VASH certificate to get back into back into a home, get into a place, a safe place. So yeah, homelessness is huge, and I feel that the government, they can do Section 8. They should have that same program for veterans, whereas as soon as you come off, you should be entitled to have at least a place to stay.
Absolutely.
A roof over your head from serving the country. But where is that?
Can you explain what is the VASH program?
Okay. It's a housing of urban development, and it's a voucher that they give for veterans to rent a place to stay. One bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom. All depends on if they have a family or not. So it's based off of that. And it's something that they give, but to me, is just what I call the dog and pony show. They will show the numbers of them putting all these veterans into housing, but then 6 months down the road, all those people are back on the street again. So it's been like a vicious cycle, and then you have a lot of people that with the PTSD get discouraged. And they don't even want to go through that again. So they just live under a bridge or out somewhere.
Go ahead.
What Michael's saying, you know, not only that they discourage behind that, you got a lot of people that's coming home now that discouraged, period, point, like Marvin said, on how the government has treated them and once they get out. And they will say, heck no, I don't want to go to the VA. No, they're not going to do nothing for me. And all these other organizations, they tell them to kiss so-and-so, because they have been used, they figure. You know, like they tell them, okay, if you join here for so many years, you get your college and all this, right? But they don't read that bottom line saying that you got to go to Iraq, you got to do Afghanistan before you qualify for this. And this is what these kids don't know. And so when they don't say, no, I'm not going there, okay, well, you can't get this. So now they out in the streets. They ain't got nothing coming. They don't have the choices like he just said, you know, what's your name again?
Bob
was talking about jobs and things, okay?
So how would a veteran get in touch with you if they themselves need help?
If they need help, all they have to do is they can come down to Jesse Brown VA Medical Center, 820 South Damon. We're located on the first floor, right by the outpatient pharmacy, right by the cafeteria. We're there from 7 o'clock in the morning until 12:30 in the afternoon, every day, except Saturday and Sunday. We've been doing this for 17 years.
Now, just to turn the page a little bit here, I'm just wondering, as veterans, do you feel disrespected by the kneeling protests that Colin Kaepernick and other NFL players chose to engage in.
This is Mike Smith. I'm going to address that one first. I went in the military in 77. It wasn't until I got in the Navy that I found out that the Navy was the last branch to allow African Americans to even hold a regular position in the military. And my first 4 years, I was in three race riots. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is the U.S. military? This is supposed to be the organized organization? And I got to go through this in the military? So, and that just, that is a magnifying glass of what the whole country is based off of. And that's why we've had, for the last 250, 300 years here in this country, hell to deal with. And I understand what Kaepernick did, because it's about taking a stand. And if you call it kneeling, you can call it kneeling. But black lives do matter. And you take away the black lives that were in the military, I don't think we would even won the wars that we won due to our contribution to this country. And I feel that people that haven't gone through that struggle, they're the ones just creating this misunderstanding and trying to change it into something else. But I think that's a topic that's in the military and in civilian life that is very true, that racism is real, even all the way to the presidency.
Okay, so I'm getting a sense that you're not offended by that.
No.
Okay. Yeah, you want to say something?
I got a comment on that also. You know, it's being blown completely out of proportion. You know, it's a whole big misunderstanding. I had a conflict at the VA with another volunteer. He was under the assumption that it was a disrespect type thing. It's not disrespect. It's just like Michael was saying, for the past 200-300 years, we've been struggling and going through a fight just for civil rights. It's time for someone to make a stand, some type of stand. And I'm glad that he did make that stand, because he's not disrespecting the flag. He's saying that he's sick and tired, just like any other black man in America should be sick and tired of being tortured, or being abused, or being harassed by the police officer, or being abused on the job, mentally and physically. You know, so the idea of him kneeling, it's not disrespectful to the flag. We fought for that. We fought for that right to protest any way that we can possibly can. So for him to kneel, and I got to go with him. How can I pledge allegiance to a flag that doesn't give a heck about me? And it's been proven for years. And now it's open season on my kids. It's about time we make some type of stand. We have to, if we don't stand for something, we'll fall for anything.
Absolutely.
All right. So overall, everything considered, how do you feel about having been in the military?
Okay, everybody talks. I'm Cecil Johnson. Everybody talks how they loved it. Like I said, I went in the 50s, and I ran into some racial stuff. As a matter of fact, I went to a unit where I was the first black medic in the unit, and I was called the N-word by the company commander. But yet, throughout it all, I learned, I progressed. I stayed in 12 and a half years because I loved it. I wouldn't have gotten out when I did, but it's because of the news media talking about baby killing in Vietnam. My wife wrote and said, because she was pregnant. She said, if I stayed over there killing these kids, she was going to abort our baby, kill it. So I gave up my military career to come home. And stayed with her 3 months. I could have went back to Vietnam, but I got a job with CTA. So, but this is part of, I loved it. And as a matter of fact, like Marvin and all of us saying, if we didn't say it, if we weren't for real, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing now, with the military helping the vets because we love what we did in the service and we love what we're doing out of helping the vets to be productive and welcome, just like we are.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. We're going to have to leave it there. And you're listening to The Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in business information technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, welcome back to The Beacon, everybody. And Lainey, have you ever been to Ecuador?
I've not been to Ecuador.
No.
Oh, no. Big surprise. I know. I seem so well-cultured, don't I?
Well, you know, in Ecuador, they have this program. Actually, it's a restaurant. And you'll never guess where it is. It's in a cave.
Okay.
Rafa's Cave, La Cueva de Rafa.
Wow.
So not only is that unusual, but the other unusual thing about it, the waiters are blind.
What?
Yes. And so the waiters will guide, you know, the folks who come there to eat, guide them to their tables and deliver tangy fruit juices and appetizing dishes like caramelized vegetables and sweet fried bananas and foods the owner believes that can taste even more delightful when diners can't see what they're eating.
Wow.
Yes. And so, you know, that's something that's done quite often in Europe and also in the United States, where they have dining where the patrons are, you know, they turn the lights out so the patrons can't see, and then they're served by individuals who are blind. But this is different because it's in a cave, and it's also in Ecuador, where they really don't do that. I think this is the first time anything like this has ever taken place.
That's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to Ecuador for dining in the cave, La Cueva.
And some people were uncomfortable and they left. Other people loved it, and they stayed.
But don't they go knowing?
Yes, but still, you know, it can be uncomfortable for people because they're so disoriented. And they're not used to that because they have sight.
Right.
And so they get disoriented in the dark and eating and not really seeing what they're eating. And it makes some people, you know,
a little uncomfortable.
Unfortunately, get up and leave.
That is unfortunate, because I would think something like that would actually accentuate the dining experience, like the eating experience. You know, if you're not able to see, it sort of heightens some of your other senses. And so eating and dining and tasting food in the dark seems like that would be a much more, like that experience would be heightened.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people aren't up for the adventure of it. So. And what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
That's right.
And that
more room for me.
That leads into your unnamed segment.
That's right. No, that actually could have been a story for my unnamed segment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're on the right track with this. What I'm going to talk about, however, is there's the Smoky Mountains have installed a device for the colorblind so they can enjoy the dazzling fall colors, which is very interesting because typically if you're colorblind, you see things in kind of like grays and greens and browns, and you don't get that like pop of distinct color. But the Smoky Mountains have installed, it's the Smoky Mountains are according to the National Park Service, they're the most visited national park in America. And, you know, when October and November roll around, the mountains turn into these just brilliant, like, rolling hills of fiery colors of oranges and reds and yellows. However, there are 13 million Americans who suffer from colorblindness. I didn't realize it was that great of a population, but 13 million. And, you know, again, so they don't see those pops of colors. They see the greenish and the browns, and it's just kind of bland, and you know, they can't enjoy it or experience it. So the Tennessee Department of Tourism, have installed several special viewing devices for colorblind visitors across the park. And there's actually a video, which obviously is not radio friendly, but we will post it to our Facebook page so you can see the reactions of the people who are colorblind, who are, you know, having the opportunity to use these viewers and see the difference between, you know, what they're accustomed to seeing and what the autumn colors are actually looking like. So I just thought that was a very cool, you know, it's nice to hear when big organizations or big public entities are providing these types of accessibility services for people who wouldn't, nor, you know, they're kind of, they slip through the cracks. You know, mm-hmm. You don't hear a lot about people who are colorblind. There's a massive part of our population of people who are colorblind. So it's nice when these types of organizations are being mindful to everyone and providing accessibility for everyone so that they can enjoy the park as well.
That's
so
great.
I will post the video on our Facebook page, Lighthouse Beacon, and you can take a look at the emotional reactions yourself.
Okay.
And we'll have a name for our segment next week, or you can post your suggestions on our Facebook page too.
Or maybe we won't have a name.
Or maybe not. We'll see. You never know with us. We'll fly by the seat of our pants.
And speaking of flying...
coming up next. Thank you. Wow. Is he flying now, too?
No.
Oh, but maybe he's conjuring how to fly in his little laboratory.
Could come up with something, I'm sure.
We could. Well, we'll just use that as a segue into Luke's laboratory.
Luke is here with more information on adaptive technology. What new product do you have for us?
I've actually got some information today, so not so much a new product, but I wanted to talk about lighting. And lighting is very important for people with a visual impairment, or actually even for people without. I read an interesting study that stated that somebody who is 50 years old needs 10 times more lighting than somebody who's 10 years old. Somebody who's 65 years old needs 15 times as much lighting as a 10-year-old. People with a visual impairment will probably need 3 to 4 times as much light as that in order to do tasks such as reading or, you know, any kind of close-up tasks and things like that. So generally, as we age, we start to need more lighting in order to do things like reading or any hobbies and things like that, and people with a visual impairment in particular. Task lighting is one of the things that we sell here. Task lighting is lighting that you use for specific tasks. But the general idea is if there's an area where you like to do tasks, so for example for reading, and say you've got a favorite chair for reading, then it will probably help you a lot to have a lamp there. And ideally, when you have your lamp, the way to set it up is to have it over the kind of side that your better seeing eye is on. So let's say your better seeing eye is the right eye. Your lamp would come over your right shoulder. And you don't want it shining right down on the thing that you're trying to read, because that will cause light to reflect back into your eyes. So you want it to kind of be at the side and be at an angle to the page so that the light bounces away. And this could help you read. And again, in terms of the types of bulbs that you would have in your task light, the LED bulbs are very good. They have a broad spectrum white light, which, you know, is less glary.
All right. Lights it is. Now,
customer of the week.
Wow, you've been practicing.
Every week I try to get a little bit better.
Okay.
So the reason I wanted to talk about lighting today was actually because of my customer of the week, who was a lady called Pat. She came with her daughter Kathy on Wednesday this week, and they weren't really sure exactly what Pat's level of vision loss was, so I had her do some things for me, including reading from just slightly larger than newspaper print. And we found that with her reading glasses, she was actually able to read that size print. However, she needed sufficient lighting. And this is what was lacking in her home. Her home really wasn't lighted appropriately. So we had a discussion about different types of lighting. We tried out some different lights. And then we also discussed some other things like locator dots, which are small tactile stickers that you can stick onto things so you can feel them. In particular, in her case, it was for her microwave, which had buttons which were flush. And so she needed to stick some bump dots on so she could feel where the buttons were and she could use a microwave. And I thought she was an interesting customer because most of the customers I see have more pronounced vision loss. In her case, she was really at the beginning stages, but there were still some, you know, low-tech solutions which we could use to help enable her to do things which she was struggling with.
He's Luke Scriven. I'm Brian Hawkins. This is The Beacon.
Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
That's it.
That's it, my friend.
The whole show, nothing but the show.
The whole shebang.
And before we go, I just wanted to, again, give everybody that number. If you'd like to call the Joining Forces Call Center at the Lighthouse, the number is 877-236-7702. If there's any questions or if you have any need at all and you're a veteran, please call that number.
And we'll post that number on our Facebook page as well, just so that we have that information there.
Mm-hmm.
And, and that'll do it for us this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. All right. That's the whole shebang, my friends. Thank you very much to Brett and Sandy, who have always, you know, every week they contribute with their very interesting and thought-provoking information and experiences. And also thanks also to our friend, Dr. Janet Slick. We wouldn't be here without her. And I'd be remiss if we didn't mention our very dear friend, Bill Jurek. He's been on my mind lately. So I just wanted to say hi to our friend, Bill. He's here in spirit somewhere. So thank you very much for joining us this week. You have anything else you want to share with our friends?
I think I've shared it all. Until next week.
You had a lot of great information today, B.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great week.